Summer is right around the corner, and make it your best season yet with nutritious 2-minute meals from Factor. Eating well has never been this easy. All you need to do is heat it up and enjoy, giving you more time to do what you want. Get outside instead of prepping and cooking indoors. Factor meals arrive fresh and ready to eat, perfect for any active lifestyle. I've been absolutely loving my Factor meals. I have so many options to choose from, and they all are nutritious and healthy and so easy to heat up and eat. Factor powers your day with satisfying breakfasts, on-the-go lunches, premium dinners, and guilt-free snacks and desserts. So it's easy to savor more this season because Factor meals pack in the flavor with none of the fuss. So get started at factormeals.com/barbknowsbest50off and use code barbknowsbest50off to get 50% off plus free shipping on your first box. That's code barbknowsbest50off at factormeals.com/barbknowsbest50off for 50% off plus free shipping.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
We're so excited to have our wonderful friends, fabulous guests here with us today for a very exciting episode. My mom and I have been looking forward to this conversation for so long. So please welcome to Life Happens, Jeff Warren and Tasha Schumann, hosts of the Mind Bod Adventure Pod. It was a mouthful to say that, even though I've read it a million times. I love it. Welcome to Life Happens.
Thank you for having us.
It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, so exciting. I don't even know where to start.
I know. There's so much to say.
So much.
You and I, or all of us, had conversations prior to recording just about meditation, mindfulness practices, consciousness, spirituality, how you both came together to do the work that you're doing, how much it mirrors some of the work that we do together. And it's just so fun to be able to be here with you and dive into some of these topics because life happens. And, you know, like you were saying before we hit record, we're the scientists of life and this is our lived experience. So I guess to get started, do you all want to share how you two came together and started your journey of your podcast and where you started?
What's your version of events, Jeff?
I love it.
See, it's great. This is our first time having two.
Yeah.
So it'll be cool to, you know.
We play off of each other pretty
well. Yeah, I love it.
Well, my version is, first of all, I remember the first time I saw you. It was
I love it.
I had a meditation group in Toronto in a kind of neighborhood called Kensington Market. It was a really fun community event. The whole idea was to offer meditation. This is like 15 years ago, but offer in a framework that was had. We also had house parties. We explored different practices. It was a very
Monday nights. Everyone would come, sit in the living room, and then meditate for an hour, and then have a dance party afterwards.
Yeah, that's
basically.
So fun.
And so it was really, really fun. What I remember one day, this woman showing up and sat, and I could just tell by the way you were sitting. I was like, oh my God, this person knows how to meditate. There's people who are, you know, you're all squirming, you're trying to do it. She was boom, locked in. And I'm like, what is happening in there? And that was the beginning. And we started having conversations. And I realized that, see, what Tasha would do back then and probably still does is she would find out about some teacher or some whole school of practice. She would track them down. She would learn everything about them. She would become indispensable to their operation, build their website, start like become like their, I don't know how you describe it, like they're like right hand person. You did this for like Bob Thurman. You did this for like
Lama
Lina.
Not as much. I have like my main teacher.
Yeah.
My trajectory of that was that I was practicing by myself for quite a long time. I kind of like spontaneously started meditating when I was 14 and used to have to hide it I was like a skater kid at the time and was like, I don't want anyone to know about this weird esoteric practice I have.
Well, back then it was still weird.
Yeah. I mean, it was like, you know, the dawn of the internet. So you couldn't really even Google like your meditation. Yeah. But so when I moved to Toronto and I was practicing by myself, I practiced in the Zen tradition for a long time and just kind of like was noodling my way around, found my way to the Tibetan practices. And I had this great practice, but it was always by myself. And my teachers were, you know, in the Himalayas or traveling the world. And a friend of mine said, well, if you're looking for community, there's, you know, there's a bunch of people who meet every Monday night in Kensington Market and it's a different practice every time. You could just go. So I was like, I have no idea what practices they're going to be doing, but I would love to not be practicing by myself. And then I just went, and apparently that was this day. But I remember meeting you guys, and it was just so, I don't know, it was because having practiced in the lineage before, you know, there's a lot of rigidity sometimes, and the way that we've been doing it for 2,000 years. And it was the first time I'd ever experienced like this Western playfulness, you know, kind of like exploratory, having a dance party afterwards, people guiding each other in practice rather than like a top down. So it was really
It was also very peer to peer. It was not about there's a teacher on a pedestal. It was like, hey, we're kind of learning this together. And that was very much the feeling. And then, but then after that, every time we ended up at a dance party, we would end up in the corner like talking about consciousness, like and we'd be like talking about how we brought our meditation practices on the dance floor. In fact, I learned tons about how meditation works from noticing my own self-consciousness on the dance floor, and when I would, you know, enter into the flow of the music, and when I wouldn't, when I would come out of that, what was happening. That became, and so we would always talk about those kinds of things, and there were other things happening on those dance floors too. And
and so that kind of just happened. Jeff was always like my friend that I could talk weird stuff about, consciousness, practice, like, hey, I had this wild experience the other day that, you know, my other friends, as much as I love them, just did not get, you know.
You need that friend.
That just kind of graduated at some point to us sitting around being like, hey, what else can we do, what can we introduce, what do we want to offer the world? And the podcast was this kind of coming together of, you know, we love to get together. We love to talk about mind meditation. We love hearing other people's practices. You know, there's millions of different kinds of practices in the world. And we like to model also, you know, even just like I said, in our community, there's a lot of people who don't meditate, mm-hmm. who think it's outside of their wheelhouse or something they can't do. So even just the act of like modeling it in a very chill, friendly, playful way, all those kind of goals came together into the podcast.
Oh, meant to be.
Yeah.
I love that so much. I just want to interject because it's so much of how when I started 40 years ago, that no one was meditating in 1984, and everything for me was very rigid. And
when you said rigidity, I'm like, I'm sure your antennas went
Because that's what, when you're studying all the different lineages and traditions, that's what happens. You get into this very rigid, and I was raised Catholic, so I was thinking at one point in my lifetime I was going to be a nun. So it was kind of all met together. And it wasn't until I started practicing with other people and being with other people, and truly wasn't until I met the Dalai Lama. I went on a retreat with him once. And the playfulness.
Yeah.
And the laughing and the... Just you could feel the energy from him that this is not so serious, you guys. This is meant really to be practicing wherever you are, because you're not going to go live in a cave. I love your story because it's the same. And I think we're in the same realm of wanting to help people see that meditation and mindfulness is not, I always say, you know, take the life that you're living seriously, but don't take yourself so seriously. So there has to be a playfulness about it, or it's hard to make it sustainable in today's world that is so chaotic and hard. So I'm so excited.
It's interesting. I think the time we're living in now is really interesting. We're living in a time where like these things were once kind of in silos, like the silo of a meditation practice or the silo of a yoga practice. But now those silos are overflowing. It's like there's so much interest in this, and people are beginning to realize that actually as it overflows, the real then question is, how do you bring practice into life? Yeah. And actually, is there any part of life that can't itself be a practice? Yeah. And the answer is no. Yeah. And that's kind of what our thing with the podcast is can we actually profile every kind of practice, like outside of the meditation, like communication practices, relating practices, like voice practices, movement practices, you know, there's nothing, work practices, leadership practices.
Yeah. And so it kind of started, you know, both of us are teachers in our own domains. And so we would just invite all of these amazing practices and teachers. You know, we had like Sharon Salzberg and Adrienne Marie Brown leading a practice on activism. And we've had like lamas from different traditions and all sorts of stuff, which we love. And then we would be recording these little we call them after parties, you know, which is us kind of debriefing after having this amazing guest on and us talking about what the practice did in our bodies and how we felt about it. And we thought people wouldn't care about those at all, but our audience really, really responded to it. And so we've just this month, we're starting to do those as their own standalone episodes where it's just us kind of focusing on something that's happening really mundanely in our lives, you know, like what's coming up for you in daily life, and then guiding a practice and talking about it. And making fun of each other.
You have to be able to.
Just to make it so human, you know, practice is really, really human. And so
I love that. And I love that it's so experiential with your conversations, because at least from my own journey with meditation and mindfulness and practices, you have to do it in order to have the benefits of it. And sometimes you can listen to teachers or you can read a bunch of books, but if you're not actually practicing the practice, you're not, there's the disconnect. And so, you know, I think even listening to podcasts, you can listen to a whole podcast, you know, what we talk about all the time, you know, being present in the car or, you know, journaling or any of those things. But if you don't actually take it into your lives, it's not fully integrated.
Yeah,
and I think that's such an important piece.
Like hearing about things, reading about things, and engaging in like a conceptual way has this, it like scratches some kind of itch that it feels like you're doing the practice. It's like practice adjacent, but you never actually get in the meat of it. And that's when we were starting the podcast, we were like, we used to say, it's like pizza. You can describe pizza all you want, talk about pizza, but you don't actually get the taste unless you take a bite.
Who doesn't want to taste pizza?
Yeah.
And that's been a really fun though thing is like, well, how can we then get people into that? Like, how do we, because people think practice, oh my God, that sounds like work.
Yep.
So our whole thing is like, we try to create a really fun, buoyant environment. And then we kind of sneak in this practice like, hey, let's go on this mind body adventure together. What's going to happen? And so people go from being only in their heads. Now they're down inside. They've gone into this kind of dream like practice space, whatever it is. They're learning, they're getting the learning, they're getting the feedback. We're trying to kind of turn up the dials on the clarity so they can have a sense of more of like mind body literacy, like what is happening inside them, what's going on. And then before it gets too long, we come out, where did we just go? And then we talk about that with the guest. And then so every time the listener is getting an experiential feel for these things, and which is very different than the concept layer. And we don't have a language to talk about that stuff. It's murky, it's hard to get at. And so it's to kind of raise consciousness by sending it down into the nervous system and get more clarity around
and to show that there's no wrong way to do it.
Exactly.
Your first person experience is true.
Yeah.
Whether you talk about it academically or you talk about it in the language of the body or in the language of thoughts and images, it's like your experience is absolutely true. And I don't think we get that really modeled for us in the culture. So.
No, and I also think that too, what really helped me all these years is that practice isn't necessarily about what's happening when you're sitting on the cushion or the floor or the chair or wherever you're in bed, wherever you are. It's when I go into a doctor's office and he's an hour late and I actually can just sit there and be so impatient. Yeah. Like it's those little teeny tiny things for me is how I've integrated it into my life. And I think that's your mind bod. I think that was always the disconnect early for me in my practice was the body was kind of left behind. You had to make sure that it wasn't hurting while you were sitting there or however you needed to, you know, position yourself. But the body was not a part of the practice, so to speak. Yeah. It was like, oh, and being in recovery for bulimia for all these years, like in the beginning, I didn't care about the body anyway. I just wanted it to be whatever it was. I wanted to care about everything else. So bringing those two together, I think, is so vitally important, which is what you're talking about and doing. Because for me, that's where the healing process started to become with the body. So if you could talk about that
a little bit
about how does practice help to heal?
Yeah, I think, you know, this work on the cushion or like you said, wherever, laying down in Shavasana or whatever you're doing is so important because you're practicing the basics. Like you're practicing really intimate regulation that you might not yet be able to do sitting in the doctor's office, right? But the idea is that practicing it in a safe space and then kind of widening those circles in which you can do it, and then suddenly there's this integration. So I feel like right now, and I don't know, maybe you feel different, but I feel like culturally, you know, mindfulness has been around since the 90s. A lot of people have tried it out. People can regulate their breathing, and people are kind of at this threshold of like, what now? Like, where do I take this skill? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of interest in how to integrate it into life, how to practice in stressful situations, and rather than having this mind-body disconnect, you know? So I feel like it's like culturally people are hungry for it because that skill's been developed.
Well, and sitting like you just said, I'm sorry.
Oh no, go for it.
Sitting like you just said, as you're sitting there, it is actually working on the body to relax the nervous system. So it's helping me be able to sit at the doctor's office and wait and not be so impatient.
Yeah.
It's
you're
like
building
it all,
safety internally.
It's all
for
coming
yourself.
Together. And it, I think that's where I started to realize very early on, like, well, this is how it's working.
Yeah.
It doesn't work separately on the cushion and then not in my in my everyday life.
But when you hear reports from long-term practitioners and long-term contemplatives, that's what you hear again and again and again, is how people talk about how you come into your body.
Yeah.
And you're like, what is, I mean, I remember early on, I was like, what does that even mean? I have a body. I'm in my body right now.
Yeah.
Am I really my body? I kind of dragged my body on behind me.
Yep. Yeah.
It was a little like, you know, those wedding cans after someone gets the just married thing and they're dragging the cans. Yeah. My body was like that. I was my mind was way up here. I was like dragging it around. I was smashing my neck and breaking my bones. And I had no, you know, any signal coming from my body that was like, I'm hungry. Mm-hmm. I'm having an emotion. I'm like, whatever. I'm not paying attention to you. So you're asked what the nature of the healing is. Well, the nature of the healing is to become more of who you already are, the big you, the big you outside of just your mind that includes your body, that it actually includes your environment, and sort of like year by year, you know, hour by hour, year by year, decade by decade, that becomes ever more apparent. And they say, you know, when it comes to awakening or enlightenment, there's no gaining idea. There's no new thing that's added. It's a taking away. It's a taking away. It's a taking away of what all the things that were keeping you from that understanding, that were keeping you separate. And that has very much been my experience. And different people would talk about it in different ways, but
yeah. And I think, you know, this is language that wouldn't necessarily be used in the meditation traditions, but safety is so much at the core, because, you know, what you're talking about is this like unfurling, almost like you're, you know, all of us are like flower buds and there's this like unfurling, which you can only do if you feel safe. And meditation like kind of allows you to become your safe space. Like you sensitize yourself to being there again and again, you know, being with your breath a little bit more every single time, being with your body a little bit more. Until no matter what trauma you've had or your backstory or anything else, you find safety in your own body and you can do that kind of unraveling of you know, kind of merging with your environment, merging past the difficult emotions and things like that.
And to be, and I mean, when you truly find safety in your own body, then you find that you can truly be yourself.
Yes.
That's the amazing thing. Like it's not like it leads to a kind of muggle sameness where everyone's going to like, and that's what people think. Oh, you do a practice, I'm going to get to be the same chumpy, calm person. No. I mean, maybe that happens in some cases, but it's more, if that's who you really are, but it's
or
more
just
like
a phase you might
when pass. You're safe, when you're truly accepting of how you are, now you can express whatever weird stuff wants to come through the pipeline, you know, hopefully in a more loving way.
Yeah.
And so there's this sense of owning the buoyancy of your own life, of feeling like excited about wanting to play with life, with play with, you know, it's just, and that it plays what you hear again and again too. I mean, look at like the yogis from the Hindu tradition. Like, it's just, I mean, I see you got autobiography of a yogi over there. It's like, it's just like, they're just in this joyful play energy because they know.
But not to say that it's always joyful, you know, like
when
you're your own safe space, that means you're opening the door for things to come out. Like we talk about this all the time. Yeah. You know, we'll just text each other and be like, I just had an insane somatic opening today. Like I'm like crying and burping, you know, things come up, but you have a little bit of a wider platform, a space, like you've made yourself a space where these things can unravel.
And sometimes you just get smashed
that's
by life.
The word.
Crushed,
yes.
Crushed,
that's the word.
Stomped on.
The key word is unravel.
Yeah.
It's not an overnight.
Yes,
one minute
exactly.
This way, the next.
Well,
night
you often say like peeling back the layers of an onion. Like there's another layer, another layer,
another layer, another layer, another layer.
All the layers.
And I think you know,
all the way to the end.
A dead body, bones, like an old dinosaur head, like a lava pit layer.
I think you know because we're so oriented towards goals that there's this like let's just get it done fast. What's the fastest way to enlightenment or to healing?
Yeah,
but it is. It's a process. That's
we hear all the time from people like, oh, if I meditate, you know, then I'll be perfect and then I won't be stressed or life won't be so hard. And
yeah,
that's like the hard reckoning with no, that's not exactly how it works. But I think to your all's point about finding safety from within and, you know, really cultivating these practices to unravel. I think what's so cool about your all's work as well is the level of inclusivity and the diversity and having the range of practices to kind of meet people where they are, because it's not one size fits all for people. So can you, you know, speak to that approach as well?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that that's been a big passionate piece for me. So I'm ADHD. I'm an ADHDer. I'm bipolar too. I've had lots of my own mental health struggles on the inside, and I've met tons of people in the sort of who now, I mean, we're living in an explosion where people are having this recognition that there's so many different fruit flavors of being human.
Yep.
So that the neurodiversity piece and different practices, it's true that different practices work for different people no matter who you are. It's especially true if you have a particular quirk in the nervous system or you're wired a bit differently. So I've always been tuned into needing as a teacher to customize my guidance based on what was going on with that person's experience. And in fact, if you pan back the camera and look more globally at kind of world's contemplative practices, you see that that's always been the insight in a way that, and this is even like, go back to like, you know, old school Hinduism with the different, you know, paths to God. It was always, you know, you could have karma yoga was your primary practice was through actually doing, versus your primary practice was through a kind of concentrated sitting practice versus a more devotional practice. Like different strokes work for different folks. And so I think that it's it became when I started the Consciousness Explorers Club, which was my kind of not-for-profit, still going kind of communication, meditation, celebration. It was meditate, celebrate, activate. But that was one of our things, pluralism. Like we would get different teachers to come in to teach different practices that were working for them. And so people could see what they need. And I mean, I think that's, and then for our podcast, it's also like, you know, because what happens in life is even when you're just have a baseline meditation practice or a baseline, you know, therapy practice, and you're getting more loose and getting more open and you're starting to notice the benefits and it's wonderful, everyone still has, you know, blind spots and little pockets in which they're not functioning. They're actually creating suffering for themselves and the people around them. And so to get someone to come in and talk about, say, how to have a conversation as a practice, you know, or get someone to come in and say how to, you know, parenting as a practice, or, you know, there are people who've developed expertise in these different areas that have learned often similar kinds of core principles into what we say in meditation, but to get them to come out and be able to articulate it and share a practice, wow, suddenly you can illuminate that corner of your life. So not only different practices work for different people need different practices mm-hmm. at different times in their life.
And people need different kinds of teachers as well, mm-hmm. you know. I'm super grateful to be in the lineages that I am that come out of Tibet, you know, and I think as they came to America and North America, they were adopted by a lot of middle class people who had time to meditate and maybe the resources to go on retreats and stuff. And so there's this entire population of people who, like, you know, look like me, and young people and people from different cultures who didn't really feel included in, like, you know, Western mindfulness in the last 20, 30 years, right? And so to me, being a lineage holder in this tradition and being so grateful for how it's come to America, but now I'm like, we can put this, I can as a ex-rapper, music producer, put this in the language that I would say it in, you know? And I always say, like, I'm like a joy being. I'm just like bubbly, very just a chill person. And if I can transmit whatever meditation has done for me in that language, and people can say, like, just by virtue of the fact that they look like me or we have similar backgrounds, that now a door has opened that wasn't open before, or like they feel included in community. That's, to me, that's like a huge part of my journey. And then also, like, I always say we're the meditation odd couple because we are like best friends, but we're from different generations, you know, different genders, different ethnicities.
I'm young and cool.
That was a good clarification.
Yeah. He's a parent. I'm not a parent. Like, you know, we just, but.
I'm tired. She's not tired.
I'm never tired. Yeah. You know, he's on the ADHD side. I'm on the spectrum, autism spectrum side. And so it's like every single time we get together, it's the Venn diagrams of, like, you know, the overlap of our practice and our lives and our neurology and everything is just so wild. And so that's part of what we're giving to our communities as well.
I love this so much because it's for everyone.
Yes.
And I think it hasn't always been shown that way, or for the most part has not been shown that
Absolutely.
Way.
Absolutely. Like when I came into meditation, the first 15 years of me going to retreats were me being like the youngest, blackest, weirdest, you know, most electrically dressed person at the retreat and being like, it's okay, I'm here because I want to learn. Yeah. But not everyone feels comfortable to put themselves in that situation, right?
No, so. And I think a lot don't. And you guys are talking so much about vulnerability and all of the things. And you mentioned like there's still a little pocket here and a pocket there. Talk about, I don't ever use the word enlightenment. I don't, it never fit me even from day one, 40 years ago. I thought it never quite, I couldn't see how that could be, and then I live in the life that I'm living. Yeah. It never could. So I always thought, well, if I'm going to be this, they're talking about enlightenment, then I got to leave this. Mm-hmm. And that never went together for me. So I never used that word because I just don't, I don't know. It just never, I didn't think I could ever do it, nor did it appeal to me. And so you, when you said different pockets, I'm thinking about perfection because I am a perfectionist for sure, recovering. I think I've gotten a lot better. Thankful to you, Michelle, because you are very much not a perfectionist, but you do things
like
in a way.
You make mistakes, you let things go.
No.
Like, but I think
about, that's the whole thing about the practice, actually, because we actually do this. So speak to that, how you all navigate this idea of enlightenment. There's no goals in meditation. I think that was the thing. It's just for me to continue to unravel. I love that word. And uncover and become the greatest version of who I already am from the inside out. That's the way I always describe it. So being free of perfectionism has been a huge piece of my practice. And then also being vulnerable, though, because those two, I had a hard time being vulnerable in the beginning because I'm a perfectionist. So speak about how those work in relationship and with the practice you all do and how you're trying to help people see that that is not really the road to the happiness and the success and all the things that we all are looking for.
Yeah, I think your experience of not liking the word enlightenment is extremely relatable. Like, I remember the first time I ever heard it and had the same feeling. Like, what? So this is going to stop and I'm going to have some other experience. And then you feel like, I don't want this to stop. I'm having a great time, you know? And I think obviously that's not what's meant by it, but that's how it's received, you know, in the body. And so my whole journey was kind of like, I know that's not it, but I don't know what else there is. So it's this, it's like kind of like chasing this mystery, right? Mm-hmm. And I think so for me, I don't really use the word enlightenment, although it's kind of a shorthand. Sometimes it's like realization or there's all these words awakening. Yeah. My teacher calls it George because it's just like, call it a random word. That's what it is.
I love that.
Yeah. Dr. Pepper.
Yeah.
I love it.
You know, it's a finger pointing at an experience. And I think for me, what I'm always trying to, and both of us for sure, what we're trying to get at is the magic. You know, I think when people think enlightenment or betterment or something is not for me, it has this way of keeping you in the mundane and you're kind of like, well, I guess this is just all there is. I can work on my breath and I can get better at being, you know, like self-help, you know, I can get better at being a person, but that's it. And I think that's missing some of the magic of what it means to be human, like this mystery of where it could go, you know, this kind of not knowing. So that's what I always lean into, you know, that it might not be enlightenment the way your brain thinks of it, which is like some other place or some, you know, some heaven or something like that, but it's maybe even better. It's like some emergent quality of being human that can happen right here, and you have to really relax your concepts of what being human means to get there.
Well, I like that, maybe even better, which means we have to really develop a sense of curiosity. Yes. Like it could be even better.
Curiosity about what your own life is showing you.
Yeah.
And that's what, I mean, for me, I think it's important that people know there's a direction in human life towards more connection and mystery and wonder that is very, very real. Mm-hmm. And there's a way in which in our moment to moment now, the mind limits our capacity to see that and to be in that. Mm-hmm. And that is absolutely how it is. And how, as we begin to move in that direction towards that wider understanding, different things fall away at different paces, at different times. Some never quite fall away, which means it's always going to look different for everyone. And you have to, what the problem is, people look to their teachers for what is this mystery, what's it going to be like? And everyone has their own unique way to kind of speak about it because it's so idiosyncratic. It will never look like that for you. you have to let go of that and let it look like what it's looking like. Mm-hmm. And when you let it look like what it's looking like, that is the thing. And the thing is beyond words.
It's really a relinquishing of control, which is, at the end of the day, the hardest thing. Because we want to believe that we know, we're one step ahead of ourselves. Like, we know where we're going and what it looks like. And that's what keeps us in our loops, because we don't know what we don't know yet, right? Yeah. So you have to, it comes back to safety. If you can feel safe enough to relinquish control, you'll find yourselves in ever more widening
and it's experiences. Awesome. It's like awesome. The magic is like, I mean, I don't, God was never my thing in terms of, I didn't have a framework for that when I was young and I wasn't, but I get it now. I get what people say when they say God. Like, I feel when I'm in a flow of my practice, I feel this giddy relationality with mm-hmm. every part of life. I feel like life is winking at me, and not in some paranoid schizophrenic way. I feel like, I'm like, oh yeah. In the way that I feel very, it's like, oh yeah. Oh yeah, this happens this time. I mean, the synchronicities, the meaningness of things, like things just start getting meaningful in every direction. Mm-hmm. And the opposite of mental illness, it feels like the ultimate kind of sanity. And that is a real direction too. And it opens up mm-hmm. and you're feeling it a lot, and then it kind of contracts, you're like, oh, I want to get back to that. Yeah. And, but that is like how, to me, I feel like my whole life's work is to help people like recognize that not only is that real, there's a way it can become real for mm-hmm. them. And let's do it together as this joyful, fundamentally creative thing. And we can all be jackasses as we're doing it as well.
I love that. And I love that you're talking about that whatever's happening for you is a valid experience, and it doesn't have to look like someone else's experience in order to be valid. I'll never forget, I was in a meditation workshop probably 10 years ago, and we were guided through a meditation. And we opened our eyes, and the girl next to me raised her hand to share her experience. And she was like, that was so amazing. You know, midway through, an angel came and kissed me on the cheek and like whispered in my ear and all this stuff. And I was like, I did not. Yeah, I was like, and this was kind of early in my practice. So I was like, that didn't happen for me. What did I do wrong? How do I get that to happen? You know, all of those things. And it was my own unraveling of like, okay, whatever I'm experiencing is valid. And I love that you said that, Tasha, earlier, that, you know, the practice that you're doing is good enough, and it doesn't have to look like someone else's. And I think too, going back to the enlightenment conversation too, if you're not, you know, what people have been kind of trained to see in movies and TV of enlightenment, like, you know, this with rays coming out of you, or if, like me, if you're not the person that has an angel come and kiss you on the cheek, then it's not good. But, you know, and then you stop. Like, I could have very easily been like, well, it's not for me. There you go.
It just happened.
So you're enlightened.
Yeah. Saying I'm an angel.
Dark angel.
Oh, my gosh.
But no. I just think that's my life. I love
it's so
it.
Important. It's so but, important what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think it. I've had thousands of heard thousands and thousands of people's reports of inner experience from being a meditation teacher for, 15 years. And what if I had to make a loose guesstimate, I would say 15% of people get the spiritual special effects, 15 to 20%. They're the ones who experience, big visions, right? Lights, like entities, spirits. All that stuff, which are real as experiences. We could bracket the conversation of what does that mean in objective reality? That's a big mystery, but they're real as experiences. For most people, it doesn't look like that. It looks much more like an increasing understanding of the beautiful ordinary, the gorgeous, rich, multidimensional nature of right here. And that becomes more and more palpable. And that is many more people have that kind of, and then what you see, which is so interesting, and this is the part that blows my mind, when you get deep enough into an appreciation of the ordinary and you're truly present for it, you can begin to see how all those extraordinary spiritual special effects are also true here, just in a more modest, humble, naturalized way that you wouldn't have ever thought was exotic, that you see is not exotic. Do you know what I mean? And so this is like when people talk about magic, you watch magic in like a Hollywood movie and they think it's got to be some giant special effect, this dramatic thing. Magic's real, but it's real right here in a way that is so underwhelming to the mind that only looks to the special effects.
Absolutely. Like I think the magic, at least for my practice, is when I handle a situation better than I thought I could have or I would have in a past version of myself, or maybe I don't knee-jerk react and say something mean to you or, you know, have a little bit more patience. And I've been able to have a lot of appreciation and gratitude for that, to where that's maybe my own angel kissing me on the cheek.
In the Buddhist tradition, we say there's three doors to enlightenment or experience or, you know, whatever.
Deeper experience. Into Dr. Pepper.
Three different doors, which are...
cans.
You're the worst. Bottles, cans, clap hands. Body, speech, and mind. So body, energy, and mind, right? So the visionary kind of experiences fall under that energetic door. So some people would just have those, but other people have body experiences, which are like, you know, somatic. You could feel like something unraveled in your stomach, some shifts. My shoulders fell, like my jaw was relaxed for the first time, you know? And then there's the door of the mind, which is maybe you have some kind of idea, or like you said, you know, being able to live with anger for 10 minutes longer than you ever have before, right? These are all considered on the same, they're all of the same quality. It's not like one is better than the other, right? So
it's like the insight expresses itself in different ways, on the level.
Whichever door is more open for you. You know, if you have the energetic door quite open,
that's cool.
You're a visionary, like have a
creative
dreams.
Idea.
Yeah, that's, exactly.
Yeah.
You have creative ideas. You might have visionary dreams.
You might have gas.
No, that's the body.
That's right.
Yes, yes.
Your body,
if you're like, whoa.
Great creative idea and or...
Or you got some message.
Stomach indigestion.
Got some message in your bowels. Yeah.
Well, I think when I wrote.
I said bowels.
Put that on social media.
That'll be so much fun.
You heard it here first.
When I wrote my book, The Practice, one of the things I said was exactly what you're talking about, that for me, the ordinary moments of the day are extraordinary. And in my practice, I've been able to experience that. And it had nothing to do necessarily with the cushion. It had to do with going out into the world and loving some ordinary moment. And I think that's what's helped me unravel my perfectionism. And I was in a, I was asked a question at an event recently, what did I think the opposite of fear is? And I said, ease. And so it's that same idea that for me, it's like being, what my practice has done for me is kind of made life not easy, but I can find a sense of, oh, I can do this. It's kind of like what you were saying, you know, that I can handle things, I can do this. And so when fear starts to come out, I can take a deep breath and say, okay, you can handle this. So for me, it's like ease. So I think it's that idea helping me always unravel perfectionism has been like, how can I actually just live in a way through my life that can handle all the chaos and the trauma and the anger and the, and be able to trust that I've got it. I've got this, being so not having it as a child, especially, or as a young adult. Like, yeah, this is the beauty of life right now, being able to, I got this.
I like how you put that, ease is a great word for it. I always use kind of like the imagery of fluidity. It's like fear has this rigidifying, you know, it's it's when you feel like you need to protect yourself or control. Boundary yourself or control your environment. And when you have this greater sense of the interconnectivity of things, of people, of events, of time, of your own self and your own history, the experience is easeful, but it's kind of like this flow, you know, it's not this freezing.
Well, then the deep, I mean, I really relate to what you're saying, because I feel like I...
Do you remember when I talked about True Diagnostics True Age Test? Well, I took that test myself and the results absolutely blew my mind. By taking the test, I found out my biological age, which directly predicts my risk for serious diseases. And here's why that matters. Research shows that if your biological age is even 5 years older than your actual age, your risk of developing diseases like cancer or heart disease can jump by as much as 30 to 50%, which is huge and completely avoidable. The good news is nearly 90% of biological aging is in your hands. Of course, it's driven by things like lifestyle, habits, and the environment you're in, but you do still have a lot of control. I took the True Age test, and I just learned so much about my health, wellness, and what I can do to be more in control of how I feel and how I'm aging. The test didn't just give me a number. It showed me how quickly my heart, brain, liver, and immune system are aging, which of course was eye-opening. The best thing is the test itself is super easy and convenient. I did it from home, no doctor visit or big needles, just a quick, painless finger prick. You send that tiny sample off in a prepaid package, and in about 2 to 3 weeks, you'll get a detailed online report about your aging and your health. Fast and hassle-free.
If you care about protecting your health and want to find out what your real age is, head over to truediagnostic.com and use our code BARBKNOWSBEST to get 20% off your entire order or subscription. That's truediagnostic.com and use code BARBKNOWSBEST at checkout to get 20% off. Your future self will thank you. I'm going to let you all in on a little secret. My mom and I have always been a big berry family, which means we've always had berries in the fridge, which is why I've been absolutely loving Washington Red Raspberries. They are the shortcut to delicious because Washington Red Raspberries are picked at peak ripeness and frozen within hours to lock in bright, sweet tart flavor with no added sugars or preservatives. Just the good stuff. I've been loving having these frozen berries in my freezer so I can put them in smoothies, put them in baked goods, all of the delicious stuff without all of the fuss. These berries aren't a byproduct of fresh. They're crafted specifically to be frozen, which means they're better texture, better taste, and better results in your kitchen. They're grown by passionate farmers in Washington State, and they're frozen with care to ensure the top quality and food safety. Plus, frozen fruit lasts longer, helps cut food waste, and is always ready when you are, which we absolutely love. You can find Washington Red Raspberries in the frozen fruit section of most major grocery retailers like Kroger, Meijer, Winco Foods, and Costco. And always make sure to look for the product of the U.S. on the bag. They're also featured in popular products like Smucker's Uncrustables with red raspberry filling, as well as Smucker's Raspberry Jam. So, want to learn more on where to find American frozen red raspberries plus recipe ideas and cooking tips? Head to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. You'll find participating retailers and inspiration for every meal, plus info on how those berries can go from farm to freezer with quality you can taste. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environments right now. I had no idea. They're in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. But the good news is we don't have to suffer through this anymore because of Hormone Harmony, a formula made with only herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's what's cool about them. They help the body adapt to any stressors, like hormonal changes or the environment around us. Happy Mammoth is the company that created Hormone Harmony, and they're dedicated to making women's lives easier. How amazing is that? And this means that they only use science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. The biggest benefit of all of this, you can start to feel like yourself again. And this is what women mention over and over in their reviews online, and there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code BARBKNOWSBEST at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, and use the code BARBKNOWSBEST for 15% off today.
I've had similar learning curves, and I think for me it's a lot around, do I actually believe I'm allowed to be here? Mm-hmm. Do I feel like it's safest to belong in this place? And that wasn't a message I got when I was young. So then I become perfectionist. I become a need to control. I'm hypervigilant. I'm always trying to manage. And to finally let that go is to transform your relationship with being here. And you are allowed to be here. You're already here. You made it. You're here. Here's the good news. Yeah. You already exist. You're not going to just fall off the planet. It's done deal. But do you really let yourself? Yeah. I mean, even when you're guiding people in meditation, you see people often at the beginning, they're like a little bit hovering over the meditation cushion. It's like they have a pickle in their butt. they don't actually think they got to hold themselves
together.
It's like you got to hold yourself above the ground so that you don't fly off. Yeah. So you don't trust that you can let go.
They can just let go.
And you see it happen. You see this settling happen in the body and then of that trust. My gosh.
One of the cues I always give when I'm start, like those first couple minutes of settling, I'm like, okay, so we've come to sit. Check to see if you're trying to sit like a good meditator. Because, you know, you sit down, you're like, okay, my legs are the right way.
Yep.
My spine is so nice and straight. My hands are doing the thing, you know, and then to like dive beneath that. Okay, you did it. You did how you think it's supposed to look. Now actually let your body be. you know, let go of being a good little girl and boy, you know?
Yes.
And then there's that, at that invitation, people are like, oh, I actually don't know how I sit if I just sit. Like, what does my body want to do, you know? Yeah. And so it's this, I don't know, this kind of act of intimacy with your own self. And
no, it's so true. Like, yeah, to having that awareness of the body and just then, I mean, my mind often goes to like overanalyzing, like, is this really, am I trying to be a good meditator, or is this really how my body wants to be? It's like a whole thing. But I love that you all were talking about trust and you brought up the concept of trust. And can you all talk about how you've built up trust in your lives? Like, I remember, Jeff, when you said, when you're like feeling like you're in the flow of the universe and you're getting those winks, and then, you know, it kind of expands, but then it can, you know, contract, and then you're worried, did that go away forever? I think that's kind of where the trust comes in, or trusting that you can rely on your own safety that you've built within yourself. Like, I think a lot of us lean into trust, and then if, you know, things contract and we get hurt or we're disappointed, then we maybe will leave it behind. How can you like fortify that trust to where it's going to be part of your regular life?
Oh my God, that is the practice.
It is the practice, yeah.
It really is, like, because you do fall out of it, and you forget, and you think, oh my God, we're screwed. I got to get this figured out. That's been like my journey as a parent, you know, we're like really feeling forsaken and lost. And I know again and again, having to remember that the practice is like, and this is what it is, it's okay to be in the hard time. Mm-hmm. The hard time is part of it too. In fact, the more I can trust the hard time as being this like intelligent part of what life is showing me, the more I have that trust available. And there's no easy way to, I haven't found an easy way to do it. I mean, the easiest way for me to do it is to have a regular practice where I'm able to sit for 20 minutes a day, and where, and essentially it's like the existential gym, where I'm reminding myself that I do belong here, and there is that kind of quality of trust, and then it radiates out and holds me in the harder parts. And when I don't have that, which I haven't for big periods of my parenting, I'm much more at sea. Mm-hmm. And then in those times, well, I depend on my friends, you know, mm-hmm. I depend on my, and the teachers around me to, that's why, you know, being a meditation teacher is kind of hilarious, because it's like, you're saying the same thing again and again in a thousand different ways, because there's so many different contexts to it, but you need to hear it again and again. You need to say it again and again, because your mind, it's the simplest thing in the world that your mind forgets. The simplest thing in the world is one moment at a time. Mm. You don't need to go anywhere beyond that. Right here, what is your relationship with this moment right here? Can you breathe out and let yourself just kind of be a body here? And that reproduced again and again and again turns into that trust you're talking about. But it's so hard. Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of the reason why we lean into the play aspect, you know, and you know, it's a negotiation, because stuff that comes up in meditation is often not fun, you know, like, but if you're holding it in this wider container of joy and ease and playfulness, that's how you discover the trust, right? Like, what makes you feel like you can't trust your environment is when it's so rigid and it's so serious, you know? If, you know, like, let's say, totally. I don't know, you sit in some chocolate and you've got a stain on your butt, right? What's going to make that worse is if everyone's like, oh my God, there's something on your pants. But if everyone is like, I think you just sat in chocolate, like, that's hilarious, we can laugh about
it. Diffusing it.
Suddenly, yeah, you're diffusing it, but you're making space for it. You're acknowledging your humanity about it. So that's, to me, like this container in which trust can grow. And then in that, you can introduce more and more difficult practices. You can encounter more and more difficult things in your own psyche. You know, so it's not that practice always has to be joyful or easy or fun, but that the greater landscape is like.
Yeah, and then the other thing that is important that we do is to honor the different kind of challenges that happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so important to be validated, to be able to speak to this. This is hard, and it's hard in this way. And to have that out and be like, yeah, it is. To have that be part of it is how we, oh, I'm not alone in this. Like now, just even to be, most of the time when we're having a really hard time, we don't even know the specifics of how we're having a hard time. You know what I mean? Like you know vaguely you're having a hard time, but you couldn't really pinpoint exactly the way it's hard in the body, or the way it's hard in what the actual nature of the disappointment is, or the heartbreak is, or because it's not in your awareness. So to be able to go to these harder places too and speak in honest, vulnerable ways of what it's like, oh my gosh, now we can now we're allowed to make that part of what's real. Now we're allowed to make that part of our life. And therefore, you can begin to include that in that bigger trust.
And it becomes part of what you share with other people. Like, we have this experience all the time because, you know, we film our podcast together. So he'll come over to my house and there'll be days where I'm having the worst day. Like, whatever I'm going through is just the worst. And in my mind, I'm like, I got to get it together. We got to get on camera. We're going to talk to this big guest. Like, there's no room for what's happening here. And then Jeff will come over and he'd be like, I gotta tell you, like, I'm having the worst day. And like, he'll go through it. And I'm like, dude, you too? And just the fact that it just diffuses everything. Suddenly, you're not this like tiny container holding it all. You can share it across two bodies, across an entire room. We can bring it into the space. You know, we can talk to our guest about it. Now suddenly it's, and those end up being the times that are the most relatable for other people. Because,
and then 100%. We can run onto your bed and jump up and down on your bed. And be like, jump up and down on your bed and blaze. Totally. Your partner wakes up and we're like, sorry, because we kept jumping on.
Yeah. And so it's, you know, our hard things, the things that are the most difficult are really doorways to practice. They're doorways to community. They're doorways into the body. You know, my teacher always says, there's always something that's bigger than your practice, right? There's always going to be something that throws you off practice. That's literally what it means to be in relationship to your practice, right? You just get back on. You're like, oh, wow, that threw me off. That's something that I can work with.
Yeah. You know? My teacher, Shinzen Young, he used to say, the small self always comes back. Yeah. Like, no matter you get in the most wonderful expanded state, the small self always comes back. And then he'd say, the true kind of mastery is to not have a preference. Yes. To truly not have a preference. And that is so deep. Like, that's
very deep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard.
I love that, though.
And I do think trust from everything that you're saying is so beautiful, because trust, especially if you're someone like me who grew up with abandonment issues, with betrayal issues, with all of the things, it's been huge for me to learn little by little by little to trust myself. Mm-hmm. And I think putting the trust in the outside world sometimes is difficult. So when I can come back into myself and say, you got this, go ahead and be more vulnerable, or go ahead and do that, is huge. And where that all takes place for me is that last line of a prayer from St. Teresa of Avila, patience attains all things. That has been like a guiding light for me, because there's a Buddhist tradition, not tradition, but a story of when you start to meditate, you literally leaving this what we know to be true here, and you're starting to go out into the water. And then as you go out into the water and go out into the water, you're like in the middle of the ocean and you can't see one shore. You know, it's that idea of which shore am I going to? And that has been everything for me. Like, okay, I got it. I got to be able to be okay in the middle of the water and not see anything.
Yeah.
So I have to trust myself. I have to be able to, okay, you got this. You know it, you're practicing, you know the people, it's gonna be hard, it's gonna be all the things. And I think that's what's helped me the most. Mm-hmm. If you could talk about that idea of just knowing that whatever is happening in this moment, it may be hard, you're maybe having the hardest time, I may get so, like, so many times maybe before we've sat down, like you were saying. Oh yeah,
we get into some, you know, like, heated discussions before we hit record.
I am not in it. And you know, the people around me are like, well, what can we do? Nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, but we don't understand what you mean. We don't. Are you gonna, like?
You're okay.
You good? You're okay. Yeah. I just letting you know. So having that feeling and that vulnerability, you can even at least say that even to people that you don't even know.
That's huge.
Because I do trust myself.
Mm-hmm. But do you let yourself go into a recording where you're saying, you know what, I'm gonna just go in here even though I am not feeling 100%.
I go into the bathroom I go into the bathroom and I say, you know what, I just trust that whatever's gonna happen, I'm gonna be fine, because 99% of the time I am. And if it's not how I think it should be, like you said, preference. I have a preference that it all work out great.
Yeah.
And if it's not, then it'll be okay. Like having that. Yeah, it is exactly
the
what
preference
you're saying.
Is
giving
huge.
Up the attachment to how we think it has to be in order for me to survive.
And to know that the quote broken way we are is okay too. I mean, this Tasha's always working on me with this. I think, you know, when we're doing our segments, the two of us, sometimes I think, oh, I really want to be on about this particular thing. And you're like, people don't want that.
Yeah.
It's like, just be real.
That's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. It's like, there is the you that you're trying to be or present, you know, and that's part of your safety. You know, it's like, if I can curate how I show up to the outside world, that makes me somehow safer than just like, well, here I am, right? But it's like, in direct opposite relationship to kind of what you're giving to the world. You know, like if I'm the realer that I am on camera or on Instagram or whatever, the more that I'm giving to people, because people can be like, oh my God, that was me yesterday, or that's me today. And there's this like courage that you have to be, to go past what you prefer to look like, to just being like, this is how I am. This is how I am today or always. This is how my practice is. This is where I'm stuck. This is what I've worked through before. This is what I don't know anything about, you know, and people, there's that authenticity. You know, I often think of this when I, you know, I spend a lot of time on camera and things like that. And that comes up for me, like how I'd like to present myself. And then I think of like 20 years down the line, am I going to look back at this moment and be like, I wish I was more perfect, or I wish I was more myself? And it's usually always that I was going to wish that I was more myself, because somebody else would see that. And
that comes, though, from trusting yourself and having the safety from within. That's what I think is, which you said, what can I help people see? Like having some safety, developing and cultivating that if I say to Michelle, I'm just not okay. And she wants to try to help me or fix me, and I'll say, I'm good. Let me just sort it out. Like trusting that you can say it to another human being. I have an amazing teacher that used to say to me, have one other person that you know won't abandon you, or, you know, make fun of you, or downgrade what you're trying to say. Just have that one person that'll just say, when you say, I'm fine, let me just work this out myself. And I think that that's, for me, what I'm trying to help people see, like have, be okay being authentic, because we have to be authentic. We're not going to be on our deathbed saying, shoot, I wish I wasn't myself. I wish I'd been more of whatever everybody thought I should be.
I wish I'd been opposite.
I wish my best friend, she was a hospice nurse, and she said, Barb, she said, every single person says to me, I wish I'd lived the life that I wanted to live and had been who I am and not what other people thought I should be. And so I think in my, if I can just live my life as authentic as possible, and have those few people around me that I can be who I am, trusting that whatever I show up today is going to be good enough.
And I think that's like such an understatement, because a lot of people do not have that.
No.
Like a lot of people don't have somebody that they can really just totally kind of come apart at the seams around. And so much of a part of my journey and your journey and like every meditator that I know, like you, it seems like your journey is about sitting on the cushion, but it really is developing that whole ecosystem, you know, of your own personal practice, but your relational practice with other people. And like, you know, like he's, I can text him, we can text each other at any moment of the day and be like, I'm spinning out, you know? And it's like, wow, like how many people would pay money to have a friendship like that? You know, it's really
I've also developed a relationship. I talk to myself all the time.
Yeah, totally.
And we live together
Does.
Because of situations in our, your place being flooded, and I'll be talking to myself. She's like, are you talking to me? I said, no.
Now I don't ask, because I just know she's talking to herself.
Don't mind me. And I think that that, you know, has been a big help for me, you know, talking back to that. So,
well, and I think too, to your point, like with the importance of validation of like your experiences and how you're feeling and authenticity, like you posting on social media, like I'm having a rough day. If someone doesn't necessarily have like that person that they can talk to, if nothing else, maybe they can see you sharing that and being like, okay, I'm not alone. I have that too.
Oh yeah.
Which is like the gift of
I find that to be a cathartic part. We both have Substacks, and I find I use it often for I mean, I put meditations out every week on it, but I use it a lot for when I'm struggling with something. I mean, sometimes it's a big breakthrough I'm having or a great insight, but often it's a real challenge and I'm not really clear on the nature of the challenge, and I'll just write about it. It's a classic kind of journaling practice, and through the act of writing about it and trying to put it out there to offer it in a real way to other people, it transforms it, you know. It's the way I make sense of it. And I mean, there's a kind of delicate way you can do that. I mean, because what's our Nadia Boltz-Weber thing? You want to teach from your scars, not your wounds. You don't want to be premature in talking about the thing you're learning inside the thing you haven't learned yet.
Right.
Because that's not going to go over well.
It's not helpful.
It's not like you're in the wound. You're just gushing. So you just want to get blood all over people.
Yeah.
You have to like, it has to be, you need a bit of space or perspective from it. But for me, that writing about it, that processing it, often the practice I do with it, that is the way I process it and get space. And then I can kind of like, you know, put it out there in that way. And that becomes very healing for me. Mm-hmm. And then what's so interesting is your healing becomes someone else's. That's what's so great is that
you're mirroring the whole process.
And you can transform the thing that was just seemed like it was only a hardship for you now suddenly becomes a solution for somebody else or a way in or a way for someone else to begin a process of getting more insight.
I love that of like exponential healing. Like you,
it's not just limited.
Yes, the good one. Totally. So speaking of practice.
Yes.
We're very excited that you all are open to sharing a practice with us and with the viewers and the listeners to experience, since we love experiential practices.
Mind-bod adventure.
Would you want to do it?
Oh, you can do it.
So lead us in.
This is how it goes. Every one of our episodes that we sit down, well, usually if we have a guest, the guest will guide the practice. But if it's just the two of us, then we kind of throw it up in the air. And every single time he turns to me and says, you want to go? And then I say, well, you can go.
Well, I can guide any kind of practice. So do you guys have a preference?
Just lead us in a short, something.
Leader's choice.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, what I'll do is I'll do something dead simple.
Something simple that.
Yeah, like I do the Do Nothing Project on Sunday nights. My whole thing is to try to make meditation radically accessible. So I'll practice around that. So it's not going to be the wild variations of cool little interstitial things you can explore in reality. That's also true with meditation. Yeah. I'll focus more on the sane, calm, settling, naturalized version.
We'll go to your podcast for all the other experiences.
You can go to the podcast. You can listen to Tasha's meditations for that. Okay. So if you've never meditated before, most important thing, no big dealness. You're just sitting and existing. You already exist. So don't make it a big deal. Eyes can be open or closed, whatever's comfortable. Body, you can be laying down, you can be slowly washing the dishes, or you can be sitting, like we're sitting. And a few slow, deliberate breaths. The breaths are mostly just to go, oh yeah, I have a body. You do have a body. What does it feel like to have a body? To have a body breathing into your belly. To have a belly, to have a body connected to the ground under you, supporting you. So the framing I want to offer here is, don't think in your head, oh, this is a special moment I'm meditating. Think many, many times you've come home early from work, say, or whatever it was, you had a 10-minute window where you could just sit on your fire escape or your front stoop or a park bench, and you didn't have to be anywhere, and there was nowhere else you wanted to be. You were just sitting and being this raw human being in your life. Maybe vaguely listening to the sound of traffic in the distance. The eyes are open. Maybe you're looking at a tree or the ground in front of you. You're just existing, friend. Can you sink into that? Give yourself permission to be a body at rest, not needing to stop any thoughts that may be there. I mean, they'll be there. Just kind of let them carry on, the momentum's happening in the background. In the foreground, this commitment to kind of existentially loiter right here in the present. Feeling the breath. Noticing the sense of the whole body sitting. This is meditation, this very simple way of being human that is there as a baseline under everything always. Whatever's happening, whatever sounds, sensations, feelings, can you welcome all of it? It's part of what's here. It's a done deal. Welcome to the party. Welcome to the vibrating, self-conscious, gooey, flowy, awkward mind-body situation. happy to have you here along with the rest of us in this web. And all of us arrived right here. We're all converging in this exact mysterious moment. And that's pretty mysterious. Pretty normal, too. Now just coast. 3, 2, 1.
Enlightenment. Now you're experiencing the goodness. Join us in our mystical cult.
I mean, that was...
We did it. We Ding. Brought them to enlightenment.
I love that.
So was that the right length?
So good.
That was perfect. Perfect.
Absolutely perfect. Thank you so much for that doing
was,
that.
Yeah.
I liked the
that was wonderful.
Yeah. Existentially loitering.
Yeah. Yes.
Line. Just kind
that.
Of,
yeah. It reminded
scratched
me,
something in my brain as
yeah,
well.
It yeah. reminded me of Bob Thurman, one of my teachers, always says mm-hmm. that the practice of being a yogi or a meditator, really, like if you commit yourself to it, is like dropping out. Mm-hmm. Like he calls it becoming a dropout, because you're like, I'm dropping out of the rat race. I'm dropping out of like, you know, need to do mind, goal orientedness. You're like a surfer dude in California. Totally. Like you're just like loitering. And I love that. I remember when he said that to me, I was like, that's the kind of direction I need.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Cause that's yeah. bringing it to everyday life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, make it sound a little bit language. Like being a delinquent. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Well, it is a very deeply rebellious act.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, to go against the stream, to use the Buddhist phrase, like the stream wants to hurl you along unconsciously along with everyone else, like and it's like, nah, I'm gonna go a different direction. I'm gonna turn around and walk upstream, and everyone's gushing by you with their fears and worries, and you're like, I'm scared too. But
then you realize, we rarely get permission to just drop out for a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's a really neat I really can just drop out for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Tell us how people can find you.
Yes. Well, we have lots going on. So first of all, the kind of hub of what we do is mindbodpod.com. That's our MindBod Adventure Pod video podcast, but it's also available on all the podcasting platforms. And then Jeff and I both have, as like offshoots of that, our own Substacks. His is Home Base with Jeff, and mine is Bodhi Savage with Tasha, both on Substack. And then we're doing, this year is our first foray into doing Mind Bod Adventure Squad retreats. So we're doing a retreat at Omega.
The two of us, yeah.
In June.
Which will be giddy and hilarious and mix all kinds of like there'll be dance parties and sitting meditations, and we just want to mix all the goodness of what we're into live.
That will for sure be a good, a fun, joyous
time. That will be
time.
A fun, joyous time.
So basically,
it's for people who really want to get weird.
I was going to say weird out, I'm sure.
Who want to weird out.
Not in a performative way. Like really, it's to be like, what is it to be human?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so wonderful. We're just kind of developing this whole ecosystem of practice and building community more and more.
Thank I love you. That so much.
Thank you for being you. This is amazing.
Oh, thank you guys for being
Thanks for
you.
Having us on. Thank you. I love this. I love that we've just realized that we have the same relationship.
Exactly.
Therefore, you are coming on.
I was going to say, we could have a lot of more conversation.
A lot of, yes.
So we usually close an episode out with a quote.
Yes.
We have one of your quotes from your book, Jeff, that
I
think is very, it's what you say a lot, which is why we have to have more conversations, because there's so much synchronicity. Yeah. But I cannot say this frequently enough. The goal is not to clear your mind, but to focus your mind for a few nanoseconds at a time. And whenever you become distracted, just start again. Getting lost and starting over is not failing at meditation. It is succeeding, from your book, Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics. And I think that really kind of encapsulates this whole conversation of just accepting the moment.
Starting again.
And not judging it.
Again and again. There's no other place to be. We think that we could be in some other moment, and you can't. No.
Exactly. Like, I've tried.
Yeah, once you get that, it just kind of all, okay.
Yeah.
I got it. Stop fighting.
We have to like convince the mind, because the mind thinks that's underwhelming. The mind's like, I know what that means. Be in the moment. Like, that doesn't sound that interesting. And you're like, no, but it is.
Yes.
You have to like get under the mind's judgment of it before you can see what's here.
I think you said that too. We want to control so badly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a safety mechanism. Yeah. I have a lot of compassion for all of us.
Yes.
we're all trying to control shit. Yes. But we can't. And then you realize you can't and you have to just, the practice is just letting go a little bit really every day.
Thank you.
Well, thank you both for joining us. This was such a fun conversation.
Offer valid on standard browsers, U.S. only.
When I heard about Date My Age, I thought, really? But there I was in my empty, quiet house, my laptop on the kitchen counter, and I typed in my name. Looking for a man between the ages of 40 to 60? Sure, why not?
Date My Age is different. With verified profiles, you can feel safe and secure to explore meaningful connections with interesting and mature singles.
Date My Age made it really easy. I could join and view online profiles for free. All of a sudden, my empty house wasn't so quiet anymore. I got so much attention, it just made me feel seen and alive. Date My Age helped me start a totally new chapter in my life.
Find a friend, a lover, a partner at Date My Age. Get 60% off when you join at datemyage.com today. That's datemyage.com to connect with thousands of singles worldwide. datemyage.com.